Well, our next guest hardly needs any introduction. Bob Surrett with Shively Labs. He's an engineer's engineer, and he always comes across for us, and we enjoy having him every year that he comes here, and his talks are very informative. He's the director of engineering at Shively Labs. So he holds a electrical engineering degree from Lowell Technology Institute. And he's been in the development of broadcast antennas, filter systems, and RF components since 1974. So he's been around the block. It's not his first load of pickles. He's currently a senior member of the IEEE, and he's also with the Association of Federal Communications Consulting Engineers, the SBC. He's authored the CRC Electronic Handbook on filters and antennas, the same thing with the NAB Engineering Handbook, the 10th and 11th edition on filters and FM antennas. Well, Bob, now that I gave you that big introduction, you got to live up to it.
Thank you. Thank you, Gary. It's always a pleasure to come here and be invited. Every year we get a little bit fancier, but that's cool. Last year I kind of ran out of things to talk about. And Terry Bond said, well, why don't you talk about antennas? You do patterns, you do stuff like that. It took me all summer long to come up with something. So if I bomb, it's Terry's fault. And he said this morning it was my fault, so we're okay. Making the impossible possible, they wanted me to come up with something catchy so you guys would all come here. We've been working with antennas and patterns. I use a model range. Other people use full-size ranges, but it's important to do pattern work, and what does pattern work involve, and how do you get there from here? I thought I would start with kind of a basic building blocks of what patterns are. I started with single building blocks. This is the pattern of a panel antenna. It's one just panel, has horizontal vertical components, and it's that single building block. Someone said, boy, if I take that building block, and instead of putting it on the front of the tower, I put it on the side of the tower, the pattern won't go this way, it'll go some other way. I didn't put the pattern up because it was kind of unusual. If the commission ever saw it, they'd probably puke, but anyway, I said, we've done strange things. If you take two of those panels and put them 120 degrees apart, you end up with a really nice cardioid pattern. We've done these a lot. Works well, put them on towers that'll physically support the panels. Life is wonderful. If you have to manipulate the panel, you change either the phase or the amplitude, and you basically just reduce one of the side lobes. Very straightforward, works easy. If you put panels back to back, one of the things you notice here, that the horizontal pattern and the vertical pattern have different shapes. That's because they are different. Even though it's a panel antenna system and the dipoles, or it's a cross dipole system type of thing, even if you have the kind of the European style, which has horizontal and vertical elements, the patterns are different. Even though it's on a screen, the patterns are different. And if you take and you put three of those panels around, very symmetrical, same phase, same amplitude, you get a nice, even pattern. That's the horizontal, vertical, and that's kind of omnidirectional, plus or minus a dB and a half, which is about as good as you're going to get on a broadband system. In putting this paper together, I was looking at some old files, and all of these patterns and things really come out of you. You store them, you measure them, you store them electrically, and you come out of the computer with them. Well, I had to chuckle because I found the sheet of paper in my drawer. 1975, I think it says up there. I actually calculated the vertical azimuth pattern. Actually, I worked for Ed Shively back then, and we started getting into panel antennas. And he said, why don't you calculate what the best you can do? What is the best we can do? And at that time, I think I bought a TI-50 or something like that and calculated point sources around a triangle. And that's the vertical azimuth pattern. That's the horizontal azimuth pattern. And there's the measured pattern. Panels, the model panels were not perfect, but one, I thought it was interesting that what we're doing today is really no different than what we did a million years ago. And I actually did that. I've been in here too long. Actually, I've got a 16-year-old daughter, turned last week, so I've got another 15 years to go. This is a three-around panel system. It was optimized at this high frequency so that it would have the cleanest and best pattern we had on a particular face tower. Spacing of the antennas is very important. The further away they get from the center of radiation, the bigger the tower, the more distortion you get. So we took and optimized this pattern. And you say, well, okay, there's one frequency. But then we changed frequency. We only came down about 4 megs. And as you can see, the pattern changed. And we went down again. So the guy at the bottom, which is actually 99 megs, at the top, the antenna was optimized for the top end. And the person who bought the antenna said, well, you optimize it for me, and I will rent it out to other people. Well, when this guy found out what we had done, like 3 years later, he was not very happy. Because he thought, and he was told, that patterns don't change. Whatever you see at one frequency on a panel antenna is what you'll see for all frequencies. And that's just not true. It's a mechanical device. When you change frequency, the wavelength changes, so the pattern's going to change. Okay. This here is a different panel, even though it just shows one little arrow in the middle. This is what I call a European style. It has four dipoles on it, has two horizontals, two verticals. The horizontals are spaced halfway. The verticals are halfway, but in the elevation plane, they add up as full wave spaced. This happens to be a photograph of an antenna we put up on 4 Times Square. It's kind of hard to see, but what we've got is 1, 2, 3 horizontal radiators that are half wave spaced, and there is 1, 2 verticals in the kind of the same aperture. So on top of this system, in order, because we're in 4 Times Square in New York, we had to keep the radiation up off of the buildings. We actually made an antenna that has 7 horizontals and 6 verticals, and they're all halfway spaced. And that's the pattern that you get from it. So on that structure, that's the best you're going to get. Now, I've stayed kind of omnidirectional here, but again, building blocks of what you can do with patterns. Here's a pattern that was submitted to the FCC, and if you've ever been on the FCC's webpage, you can look at the azimuth, the composite pattern, and here's a pattern that only goes down, it's like 2 dB. And the RMS value of this is like, I don't know, 84%, 83%. One of the rules for doing directionals is that you have to be within 85% of this pattern. And in most cases, you can't get there from here. What we have tried, when people come up with those very limited dips, they call them, they can't really call that a null, that's kind of just a nibble out of a pattern. We actually came up with an antenna that was used back in the 40s. A fellow by the name of Lindenblad put 4 slant dipoles together, and he ended up with that. Now you say, well, that's really not a directional pattern, but if we change the HV ratio here just by manipulating the angle, we can actually make an antenna that fits the requirement of having an 85% field and covers most of that stuff. But they're special, they're expensive. We get patterns. Now the green dot is that pattern that came off. That's the consultant, and he said, I know that if I get in here, I can fill, because I've got 1, 2, 3 protections. So I'm going to shoehorn this station in, and I'm going to send it out and have people quote on this project. And we looked at that and said, well, how do you make a propeller blade out of a system? And if I remember correctly, this is just a 42-inch face tower. I don't know if anybody out there does mechanics, but you don't put an 8-foot square panel on a 42-inch face tower. So we put Yagis on that. And as you can see, we came close, but he had to actually refile and let this out because it just wasn't going to work the way he thought. That's the model of that. Now, is anybody from the FCC here? Nobody's here. Okay. we've taken a linear polarized Yagi antenna and said, okay, if you rotate it, and some consultants said, oh, just rotate it and you'll have circular polarization. Well, in order to have circular polarization, you have to have a rotating wave. The vertical has to launch 90 degrees in front of the horizontal or vice versa, whether you want right or left circular polarization. So here's an antenna that the manufacturer is calling circular polarization. We do not make Yagis. I told a story that I made a Yagi once out of stainless steel. It cost us, we sold it for $12,000. I feel really, really bad that we had to sell it for $12,000. And when the numbers came in, we lost money on it. Yagis are expensive to build, and I don't really like them, but I have to live with what the patterns do. So here's an example of what we've done with Yagis, and the pattern that I just showed you is this setup. It just is not going to do what the computers say. Here's another, again, the green, where this is the city license. So we had to put a Yagi in that direction, and it just doesn't fit. There are just too many nulls. It doesn't, the phase and amplitude of the Yagis are not as the same as the panel antennas. Here's an example of a three-around circularly polarized Yagi system. We fed it with a hybrid, so there would be 90 degrees. It does transmit circular polarization. I'm going to show you the pattern in a second, but I think what's happening here, we've been working with this manufacturer for 2 years on this project, and their computers and my range just do not agree. Absolutely do not agree. And I think the reason for that is, and if I had a close-up, you could actually see that they've got two booms, if you will. There's one for the horizontal, one for the vertical. You rotate it at 45, you feed it at 90 degrees, and you should have a circular polarized clean signal. Well, you don't. I think the two balance, if you will, or the two, what do you want to call them? The balance, are talking to each other. So instead of getting a nice pattern like this, the black line is the FCC restriction. And this is the pattern, the blue and the red, what the computer is telling that manufacturer that it should be. Well, the consultant went to the commission with this pattern. And the commission said, well, that's a measured pattern, of course, right? And they went, no, that's calculated. And the commission said, right, this is right on your CPs, that you have to have a measured pattern. Full-size model, it doesn't matter, you got to have measured. So they came to me after the fact because the customer was not really happy with the coverage. In the meantime, the manufacturer went out and measured the horizontal pattern on their pattern range. And I kept saying, no, that's not what it looks like. They said, well, please tell us what it looks like. And that's what it looks like. Now, it turns out that that's Los Angeles, right there. Whoops. So we've been working on this, trying to make it work. And it just is, they won't listen. And one of the things they said, well, if you put a pad in that dipole, you might get it closer. And it's just the two components of that Yagi just don't add up the way the computer says it's going to add up. And I just can't convince some consultants that the computer software, and I'm not going to pick on any one Yagi manufacturer. They're all doing the same thing. They are putting out software that has no phase data. It's all amplitude, and it just doesn't give you the real world. We've had cases where we've set up a vertical and a horizontal. This case, I think, was in Utah, where they started with a vertical only, and then when channel 6 went away, they added the horizontal. And I don't know, we did it on our test range. We actually made it so that these here were going to be launching at right circular polarization because it was a 90 degree phase. Now you say, well, they're basically a wavelength apart here, and which is true. So in the near field, they're really not circular because the field doesn't develop. But at the FM band, far field is 100 feet. So if you're 30 miles away from somebody, you don't know that it's two antennas. It's just a point source. I think these guys just put them on the air and let it fly the way it was. Here is a pattern of a 45-degree Yagi. It looks similar to a pattern panel. Again, it's one radiator, just one. We have a consultant that computed this pattern using two Yagis. It's a great pattern. Looks great, wonderful. So he went to his customer, or his customer went to him and said, okay, if that's what your pattern looks like, I need to use that on my tower. So they filed with the commission this pattern. The problem is right there was the city license. Now, if I back that up one, you'll notice that there's no little bulge there. It's flat. So from the get-go, this pattern wouldn't work. He had to have that 40 or 30%, what's it? 10, 20, 30, 38%, like that. He had to have that number to get city a license. And we said, okay. So we measured that. Two Yagis. We went, what's that? I think that's an 8, but I'm not sure. One in this direction and one here. And look at the ripples between the H, the vertical pounding in there and the horizontal. Nothing. I guess it's similar to his pattern, but it's not that happy, smooth thing you would have. And it made that percentage. He forgot. You have to have 85% of the RMS value, and that pattern doesn't make it. So here you've got a system that meets a city license but doesn't meet the 85%, and because it's a there's a thing where you actually, if you file for an application and you get awarded it because your coverage is better than the engineering package that was next to it, so you say, I'm going to cover all these people. Well, their audience down there, and because they're not covering it, this did not pass. The consultant went back and said, well, just change the HV ratio. Well, we did. We got it so that now that the vertical more or less fills the 85%, but in order to change the HV ratio, we ended up dumping the power pack there. So again, he never made city a license. We spent 3 months going back and forth and back and forth and back and forth for a project that the consultant told us would work. It absolutely didn't. The problem was he went out and bought the antennas. And I don't like having unhappy customers, so I did not charge him for any of our time. The consultant has not talked to me since. And it's like, okay, it's the antenna's fault. But we didn't supply the antenna. We just did the engineering. That's a model of four slant Yagis, 45 degrees, again, CP. But when you stack them side by side, you narrow the beam. So there's the pattern. That's one of the cases that it actually worked. I didn't think it would, but I'm willing to try any kind of a pattern on our range because it's not that hard to do. And this complies totally with the FCC rules, which works really well. Here's another one where you have to fill that green area. The first time we did it, we said, well, just cover here. He said, well, what can you do here? I actually had these patterns mixed, but if you had two Yagis, you end up outside that composite area. We ended up just taking, because the choice was either one Yagi or the two, we ended up reducing the angle and getting it so the vertical's inside the horizontal, inside that composite pattern. Oop, wrong way. Here's one. I believe it was a Rhone 45. It's an 18-inch face tower. How are you going to put a panel antenna on that? It's just, and those are Yagis. Again, those are the Yagi type of things that you try to fill. The green line, he went down to 15%. There's just no way that can happen. Here's a case where the tower actually was strong enough. It's a 40-plus inch face tower. Here was a couple of Yagis that went on it, and it just didn't meet the 45 or the 85% back in here. And we did some analysis on the tower, and in fact, the panel antenna did meet the criteria from inside the composite and had the 85%. So we've had cases where it looked at first sight we'd have to use some kind of a Yagi or side mount ring or whatever you have it. And in this case, we replaced it with a panel. Oh, I got plenty of time. Here's one. Here's the city license. Here's where all the coverage is, and this is the ocean. You put a Yagi out there. The key here is it comes to a point. It comes to a point here. If you do any kind of an antenna at all, it has beam width. It is not going to go to a pencil. It's just not going to go there unless you stack many wide. And if you start stacking them, it's just, they're not going to work. We did one case where we did a very highly directional. At the time, it was vertical only. It was in Maine. Somebody here was talking about Presque Isle when I walked by the bench. Is that person still here? Anyway. When I heard Presque Isle, I said, oh, I know where that is. He was outside of Norway, Maine. He was on a 3,500-foot, it's called Streaked Mountain, but it's just not that high. And in order to get his pattern, we put two side-by-side at 100% going towards his city license, and then we put two side-by-side with a reducer in it going to Portland, Maine. So he put almost 50 kilowatts over Portland, Maine with Yagis. But in order to do that, he had to have three levels. And he put them on a 24-inch face tower. And it went through the winter. It was put up last August, I think. When they got to the site, I think we had snow on that hill until like the middle of May. And as the winter progressed, his transmitter stayed on the air less and less and less. And you really couldn't, the only way to get there was on a ski-doo or a sled, whatever you want to call that. And they went up during the winter one time because one of the guy wires broke and they almost lost the tower. Well, when the ice cleared and the fog cleared and the mud cleared and they took their four-wheelers up, they got up there and there were only two radiators, two Yagis that were pointing in the same direction of their city license. Have you ever seen, you go by in the old days, you could buy a TV antenna on somebody's roof and it had bars, and that's what I picture as an antenna. That's what he had. He had a mess. And he spent like $20,000 on that antenna to put it up. And we told him at the time, he said, well, this gets you on the air, but it ain't going to stay there. And he said, ah, got it made, because he had reinforcements and he had bars and stuff like that. He ended up having to, because it was vertical only, now they're going to circular polarize, and we're going to put up a standard antenna with radomes on it. He's got to strengthen the tower some. But the key is that if you do Yagis and you're in the north, the chances are you're going to replace them every year. And it's just kind of the fact of life. That's what happens to them. And if you see patterns like this, if your consultant shows you one of these, go, I'm sorry, no. You might try it, spend some money, but you're not going to get that point What you'd end up doing is it would round off at about 62%, something like this, and this at about 95%. But if you have to meet 100%, it's just not, theoretically, not possible to happen. You can take, and I've spent a lot of time on Yagis because we've been doing a lot of Yagis. People want Yagis. They want these very restricted patterns that you're not going to get with a standard ring-style antenna. They can't afford, or the towers can't afford the panels, so they do Yagis. One thing about Yagis, because there are still a couple of channel 6 areas, you can slant the Yagis so you can take and change the H-V ratio almost anywhere you want. Ah. I haven't shown this pattern in a long time. I'm not sure if some of you remember it or not, but a guy in Maine, the caption on this was pirate taken off the air. A guy in Maine called us up, said he had an off-air emergency, and he needed an antenna. So he stuck an antenna, he called us on a Thursday. On Friday morning, he came and got it. Friday afternoon, he called up, he said he had a standing wave problem. I said I wasn't sure what I was gonna do about it, and he went on the air Friday afternoon, and I told him he said something about the Phoenician blinds changing his standing wave, and I just couldn't fathom what he was talking about. And he ran out and did local advertising and made some money for a week. Well, for a weekend. And on Monday, the FCC showed up because somebody complained. And the receptionist said, oh, he won't be back in the office till tomorrow. So they left and came back the next day. Can't believe they did that. And then the newspaper sent, newspaper guy, broadcaster, I believe it was Camden, Maine, sent me this photograph, which is great. We still don't know what the pattern was with that. It was probably directional, but we're not sure. If you take a standard side-mounted antenna, and it really doesn't matter whose, and you put a few parasitic elements here or there, you're going to end up with a basic cardioid pattern. That's on a pole. It's very controllable. You can almost dial these things in. In this case here, we only used a horizontal parasitic element. We played with the distance between the pole and the antenna. And the pole, the mounting pole, acts like a parasitic because you've got an interbay feed line. I go back one, actually, there it is. There's the interbay feed line back there, which is metal. So you end up with a parasitic element to start with, and then you put it on a pole, now you have two parasitics. You manipulate them a little bit, and you have a cardioid. You can almost dial this from somewhat omnidirectional down to something directional. Here's a case where it was a 10-foot face tower, 10-foot face tower. And here is Burlington, Vermont. There it is. There's the city license. He had to cover it down here. And there was just no way. You can add parasitics, you can do screens, you can do anything. A 10-foot face tower just doesn't work. In order to comply with the FCC's rules, we had to do that. We put it off the leg of the tower, and it filled that city license, but it didn't fill where we wanted to go. So when he filed when his consultant told him what he should do, it was, oh yeah, we're gonna get Burlington. They forgot he had to be, the only tower in sight was one of those big tapered cell towers. And in Vermont, you just don't put a tower up when you want to. They just say, no, I'm sorry, you can't do that. So what they ended up doing, the consultant took and cut that off here, so it came over to here, cutting off Burlington, but it made the 85%, so he can get licensed. Here's an example of this is one that you say, okay, we just built a new tower, because this old TV tower is gonna be taken down. How many times have you heard that one? The old one's coming down. Well, it's still there. And that's what the pattern looks like. But it's the antenna's fault. It's not working correctly. It's like, they call you up and say, wait a minute, it's not working. Why is it not working? Send me a photograph. And you get a photograph of the other tower. And say, why is that tower there? And say, well, they were going to take it down. When you bought the antenna, they were going to take it down. Well, they can't afford to now. So you got to be careful. Then there's the case where you get to point the antenna away from the other tower. And there's some effect there, but it's really marginal. So you can do things like that. This one here just, actually, this one here didn't make the 85%, so this had to be cut in a little bit. But the reality is it's a standard side-mount antenna, and it works. Here's another one, bigger tower, TV on top. That was the old TV tower. This is the new TV tower, the old one. That's never going to go away. And the pattern looks like that because it's all way in back. So there's almost no change. And it turns out if you look at the spacing or change the spacing, we pushed our range as far as we could go and did a simulation of a 75-foot stretch. And at 75 feet, you almost don't see it. At 30, you do big time. We had one antenna in Connecticut where we put it up, and the actual tower, the other tower, the dip in the tower made it so it met the FCC compliance, which actually worked out kind of stupid, but it did. We use the towers, we use the antenna to make the patterns for each site. This is one of those, it's just a pole and one of those whip antennas. We didn't model, we tried to see if those wraparound communications antennas, they're so small at the FM band it doesn't show. Here's one. There aren't many of these around. California has them. The tower looks like an H, and we've made directional antennas there. Here's one that had, it's a pole, and they wanted circular polarization, and if you put these two up at the same height, they bang into each other. So they space them like 0.8 or 0.9 wavelengths away, whatever the manufacturer wants. And the problem I have with this is that you don't know what the gain of the antenna is. Now, if you go to the manufacturer of the Yagis, they will say, oh, it's just the combination of the two if they were stationed over each other, if they were collinear. I went, no, it just can't happen. They didn't have the math to do it. I guess I could have, but I don't have the math to do it. And I said it's going to be somewhere in the middle, and we came to a compromise. But it wasn't as advertised 6 dB. Most Yagis, you look at a spec sheet, they'll tell you that a Yagi like that has got a gain of 6 to 7 dB. No, it doesn't. On paper it does, but when you actually set it up and measure the horizontal and the azimuth patterns, they don't come up to those. I think at one frequency it might, but in general it doesn't. What happened? Okay. I didn't bring the pattern of this, but you can imagine what that is, vertical only. You can kind of imagine that it's basically a big propeller blade, and that's what they wanted, and that's what they got. And you know, it's just a testament to what we do with patterns. Is there's every piece of coax. I don't know if you can see the ladder in there, but we've got a ladder in there. There's all kinds of stuff. So the patterns that we measure are actually what they are. Uh-oh. Cell towers, you know, you put those crazy things up there. You try to shoehorn an antenna between cell towers, cell platforms. What we've found is that if this is big enough, it acts like an umbrella. And I've had people call up after the antenna goes up. They won't tell us that that's there. They just say, oh, it's a 10-inch pole, a 12-inch pole, whatever. It's, okay. And you run a pattern, you get it. And it goes up and in the field, and you get a call. If you don't get a call, you know your antennas work. It's when they don't work. They call you up right away. Said it's not working. Well, now with photography, you say, send me a picture. And they send to this, and you say, where is it? And they actually had put the antenna right up in here. Doesn't have a standing wave, doesn't have a pattern, doesn't have anything. You go, wait a minute, what are you doing? Oh yeah, you didn't tell us about that. So you got to be careful how you put these things together. Let's see if I did that. No. Now it works on me. Go back. There you go. Okay. Well, yeah, and this, you see this. But what's happening now is that, and I know that Jeff did a talk on where the industry and things are going, and with IBOC and all that. It's interesting. Is anybody from IBOC Ubiquity here? Okay. No FCC, no Ubiquity, so I'm good, I think. If you broadcast HD2, right? And I don't know why or how it all works, but if you have an HD2 thingy that you're broadcasting out of your box, the commission will allow you to put a translator on and broadcast HD2 in analog. And in places like Atlanta and things like that, the HD2 analog signal has a better signal and better audience and more ratings than the parent signal. How do you figure? That makes sense. Well, this is a translator. This violates all Part 73s out the window. It exceeds 2 dB and 10 degrees, whatever. But this is a translator and a booster operate on different rules. If you look up Part 73, those are full facilities. Part 74, boosters and translators. So you can do this with a translator or a booster. And if you've got a tower, and it turns out we have an antenna that sells for $1,000. That's the pattern off a 10-foot face tower at that frequency. It just happened to work. Can't believe it. If that were a part 73, it would have been $20,000. The guy was ecstatic. He's just running around finding translators that he can rebroadcast on. If you take a standard ring antenna and you put it on like a Rhone 45, I think? Not sure. Anyway, it's a small tower. That's kind of the pattern it gets. I can issue that to the FCC under a booster or a translator, and all I have to do is the composite pattern. They don't care whether it's horizontal or vertical. They just don't care. And I think it's they don't understand. And it's really a shame. I'm going to throw this in trying to develop antennas that don't have a lot of downward radiation. We try to run elevation patterns on our range. And anybody who's ever tried to do an elevation, try to fly an elevation pattern with a helicopter. You know, you can fly an azimuth pattern, get somewhere close, but try to fly the elevation pattern. Well, we had an antenna, and what they did is it's a standard panel, and because of the limitations of the tower, they had to put the climbing ladder on the panels right there. And what we found is that the panel was shorted there and there, but not over here. So it was a asymmetrical screen that the panel looked at, and it caused downward radiation. And we went, oh, how does a panel cause downward radiation? And at first we said, no, it can't be the antenna. But we looked and looked and looked and ran this and said, okay. And what we ended up doing, because you couldn't take the ladder off, you know, the riggers might complain, but we ended up shorting the panels. So you basically made a panel that went the whole height of the antenna. And when we did, that's the elevation pattern. And I was so pleased with that. There's the main lobe, the first minor lobe, and the third lobe, and it's got a little bit out the back. But I thought that was about as nice as you could get on a thing, because when you do elevation patterns, the wires get in the way, the mechanics get in the way. It's just really difficult to do that. And my pattern guy looked at that, and he said, because he had never seen an elevation pattern, he said, oh, what's wrong? And I said, that is, anybody that does patterns, I think that's a beautiful pattern. And I kind of left it like that. just to summarize, now I've kind of picked on Yagis a little bit, but they're out there. So there are a lot of antenna systems. I know of one manufacturer that has a transmit antenna in one building and a receive antenna on the other and a parking lot between. So if they want to change the pattern, they change how many cars are in the parking lot. I've heard there's a story out there that one manufacturer has a similar antenna to a parent company or a different company, and when they do a directional pattern, they just pull out the pattern off the catalog and submit it to the commission. They don't even have a range. So when you look at patterns, you need to know, when you're buying an antenna, make sure your consultant knows exactly what it is that he needs you to do. He's working your behalf, and if you see these little pencil beams and patterns, you say, is that really real? He goes, the computer says it's real. We had an engineer that did everything by the computer. The computer was right. Even if he thought it was wrong, he just was instilled that you couldn't prove to him the computer couldn't. Well, he just didn't understand garbage in, garbage out type of thing. So he needed to look at all these things. And let's see. We can do this, but we can't do that. Okay? And I've got, look at that, 4 minutes and 50 seconds. Any questions? It's an open type of, yes, sir.
Yeah, I'm the culprit. Well, all the pictures you were showing on the range, were those at 1/10 frequency models?
Yeah, they're 4.5 to 1.
4.5 to
4. 1. 4.5 to 1. And I did show one photograph of some Yagis inside an anechoic chamber. And
yeah, I saw that was 4 to 1 too then.
That's a 4.5 to 1 also. And we actually built the chamber. We spent a lot of money for an indoor range. And it turns out because of the space requirement, we could only use antennas that would turn a certain radius. And then we also do military stuff, which is that we have to pass EMI. So after we built this range for an indoor system for our antennas, the military guys took it over and did EMI, and we haven't put it back on the air since.
Okay,
but
next
it's all
question.
4.5 to 1.
What kind of input power can you put into those Yagis?
Well, it depends. The U.S. manufacturer, I believe, is 500 watts. And that's Scala. Everybody knows Scala. They have a 500-watt Yagi, and I think that's what they do. There's a couple of companies in Katrine, we went over this. Katrine, where's the Catherine guy? There he is. Pronounce it for me.
Katrine,
there you go.
Okay.
They have, I think, a 10-kilowatt galvanized Yagi. It's 12 feet long, and it weighs several hundred pounds. It's huge. There's a couple of Italian firms that have them that will take 5 kilowatts. The one that went into Maine I talked to you about had all those Yagis, and they all fell apart because of the ice. The beautiful-looking Yagi, fairly rugged, but in the north they just can't get. So you can actually get antennas, Yagis, that will take 5 kilowatts. Will take 10. There's one in Texas. I think they did a 6-bay vertical-only Yagi, and they're getting 100 kilowatts out of it. So you can stack a lot of Yagis. Anybody else? Yes.
I was just wondering, Bob, that pirate radio antenna in the window, did the bedroom pass ANSI radiation standards?
I don't know how that guy didn't get arrested. Absolutely have no idea how he didn't get arrested. It violated everything in the book. Can you imagine being inside that room where the transmitter was? Your hair would stand on end. You know, you're not supposed to say, back in the old days when we used to climb and do those things, your hair would stand on end. Yes, sir. Oh, sir.
With HD radio, Bob, someone increases their vertical component, do you think they can better override the ambient noise that's causing HD reception issues?
Ooh. Boy, I'm not. I'm not sure I got. I would talk about that one after. That's a good question, but I'm sorry. I'm not sure. Anybody else? A consultant?
I'm not sure, but I think our office might have submitted some of those patterns. I would say from the consultant side that we often will do the allocation pattern, even though it looks pretty wicked, and give it to the manufacturers and say, what can you do with this? And then sometimes we do have to go back and trim that.
Sure.
I would also say it's important for you and your consultant, your manufacturer, to all work together. Years ago, I had a client out in Missouri in a fairly rural area that was going to use one of your DA antennas, and your pattern fella came back with a pattern, and the client said, take a look at this. And he'd done a beautiful job of filling the allocation hole, but when I actually plotted up the contour map, he was getting mostly deer and antelope, and there was one little community that it was missing. So I went back to him and said, can we tweak this over here? Well, what he ended up with was a pattern that didn't fill the hole as nicely, but it did cover more people. So, and he was great to work with. So it's important we all work together.
Someone over here had a question, but back. Jeff, way back.
You talked a lot about the, first of all, thanks for the great presentation. I love the pictures. You talked a lot about, you know, interference of re-radiators in the area. What's your experience around use of, you know, fiberglass insulators in guy lines, and how much of that is required? How far down below the center of radiation you need to be in order to kind of take that out?
The problem with guy wires, it's even on a model system, it is very, very difficult to measure the effect of a guy wire because it's basically an infinite wire, and theory says that you cannot excite an infinite wire. In practice, you put an antenna underneath a set of guy wires and usually you're in trouble. What we normally recommend is that at least what the antenna is going to see at that level, because most guy wires go out at about 40 degrees. So if you've got a 10 bay antenna, it's 90 feet long. So by the time it's out, it's far field, 90 feet, even though it may be down. But again, you're not exciting anything near. So I look for whatever the aperture of the antenna is, that's how much non-metallic wire or fiberglass or whatever that is. If you can go a little further, there's sometimes, because of the expense, they'll come up somewhat. But you have to be several wavelengths away for that guy wire not to have an effect on the antenna. So the more you can have, the better. It says zero. They're going to cut me off. Very good. Thank you.